Welcome to Lunchtime Classics on 90.5 FM WUOL. Broadcasting live from WUOL's Performance Studio on 4th Street in downtown Louisville.
Today, Mark Satterwhite. Many of you know I'm the host of Brave New World, which is a program of new music, living composers, every Monday at 8 p.m. So anytime I can get involved in something new music around here, I'll gladly volunteer. But I am Daniel Gillum, and you are listening to 90.5. And here with us live in the performance studio is Mark Satterwhite. He is composition professor at the University of Louisville School of Music and also the director of the Grawemeyer Award. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you. Nice to be here, as always.
Well, I have to tell our listeners that we've just come from State of Affairs where we were talking about new music with Julie Credence, and so I've turned from guest to interviewer, and Mark is still an interviewee. So
yes.
Let's start out by, Mark, you telling us a little bit about your background, and then maybe introduce our first work today.
Well, sure. My parents started me in piano lessons young, and I was right away sort of intrigued by the idea of making my own music. And then later on, I also took up the double bass and got very serious about that. In fact, for a long time, that's how I made my living, was playing the bass. And I was just always intrigued by new music and making new sounds. I've always thought a part of it, the reason, was because I'm a bass player and the bass repertoire is really horrible. So you're really sort of encouraged to
write your own things.
Yeah, to write your own stuff, because you just don't want to play this awful stuff you have to play as a bass player. But all along, I've always been composing, and at a point in my life, I came to the point where I decided I really wanted to focus more on composing than on playing the bass. So I quit my job and went back to graduate school and ended up here 14 years ago.
And where did you attend school?
I got my bachelor's degree at Michigan State, and then my master's and doctorate are from Indiana, just up the road.
Yeah, very good school for composition, mm-hmm. One of the big ones in the country.
Yes.
I think one of the top schools in the country. Well, tell us about the first work we're going to hear today.
Okay. I'll make a slight plug for my recital tomorrow night first, because this
okay.
is going to be
Please
on
do.
It. I'm presenting a recital of all my own compositions tomorrow night. That's Thursday, the 10th of January, at 8 o'clock in Comstock Hall at the University of Louisville School of Music. This is free and open to the public. My colleagues are going to perform two pieces, and then there'll be some outside guest artists who will come and perform two other pieces. The first piece we're going to hear today is a trio for violin, clarinet, and piano. As you can see, the performers are my colleagues Patrick Rafferty, violinist, clarinetist Dallas Tidwell, and pianist Krista Wallace Boaz. This was a piece that was commissioned by a group called the Verdair Ensemble, the Verdair Trio, at Michigan State University, actually. Walter Verdair married Elsa Ludwig, the violin teacher married the clarinet teacher, and they started looking for things to play together, and there weren't a lot. And they added a piano to give a little more depth, and there just wasn't a lot of repertory for them to perform. There's a Bartok piece, and there's a couple of Stravinsky, and there's a Millau, but there isn't a lot, so they decided they would solve that problem by just getting people to write pieces for them. So they've commissioned, I don't know, a couple of hundred by now,
many.
I think, pieces. Many, 12 CDs worth at least.
And their CDs, in fact, are called The Making of a Medium.
Exactly.
Because they've really created a new medium.
And so I was able to get in, and this is actually the second piece I wrote for them. And they've been just terrific champions of contemporary music. I feel very privileged that they've commissioned and performed these two pieces by me. This piece specifically, both of the pieces you're going to hear today are part of a series of pieces I wrote inspired by an art exhibit I saw at the Los Angeles Museum of Contemporary Art, quite some time ago now. It was by a very interesting artist named Karen Finley, who's very well known as a performance artist, as well as a visual artist and a writer. A very multi-talented person. She had a very large exhibit in L.A. called Memento Mori, or Remembrances of Death. And it was a huge exhibit, two very large rooms just filled with all kinds of things. The first room was filled with objects that mainly had to deal with feminist issues. The second room was filled with objects that basically had to do with death and dying. And at that point, it was sort of the height of the AIDS crisis. And as an artist, she'd lost a lot of people to AIDS, a lot of friends and, I don't know, maybe even family to AIDS. And so this exhibit was just filled with things about that. It was very, very deeply moving, very intense, kind of hard to deal with. A lot of it was interactive. And in particular, three of the interactive places inspired three pieces. We're going to hear two of them today. The one we're going to hear now is called Memento Mori 3. This is the third piece in the series that I wrote. And it has the subtitle. Actually, I have to check because they have different subtitles. No. This one has a subtitle, Ribbons on the Memory Wall. And there was just this very simple white wooden latticework sort of little wall set up and a box of colored ribbons. And the idea was that you would just go tie a ribbon onto this latticework in memory of someone that you had lost. It had not been, at this point, when I went to the exhibit, it had not been so many years since my mother had died. She died very young, and that was still on my mind and still influences a lot of my music. So this particular exhibit and these various interactive parts, I'll tell you about one of the other interactive parts with the next piece, really moved me. I actually went back the next day. My wife couldn't. She just said, I can't see that again. So she dropped me off at the museum and went off and did something else for a few hours, and I went through the exhibit again. And I knew I was going to do at least a piece inspired by this exhibit. I've ended up doing three, and probably the three will be it. So just briefly about this piece, I describe it as starting with rage and ending in ambiguity. And it goes through not every single emotion one can go through at the loss of a loved one, but I hope it covers a lot of the ground. And this piece is specifically dedicated to the memory of my grandmother. So Memento Mori 3, Ribbons on the Memory Wall. Again, our performers are my wonderful faculty colleagues at U of L, Patrick Rafferty, Dallas Tidwell, Krista Wallace-Boas, and I'll just mention my wife's turning pages for Krista. Thank you.
On Classical 90.5 during Lunchtime Classics, live here in the Performance Studios on 619 South 4th Street, the music of Mark Satterwhite, performed by Patrick Rafferty, violin, Dallas Tidwell, clarinet, and Krista Wallace Boas, piano. And Mark, thanks for sharing your work today. Nice piece. And
Thank you.
A wonderful performance, of course.
They're fabulous.
Yeah. Now, we have another work coming up in a moment, and we have the string quartet setting up. And while they set up, talk to me a little bit about your compositional activities maybe throughout the year and how you if there's a way to balance those between your heavy teaching responsibilities. You direct the Grawemeyer Award, and oh, by the way, you're a composer. You know, you've got to do that too. So how do you do it?
Well, my year sort of works out into trimesters. I pretty much do my composing anymore over the summer.
Okay.
I do get a little in during the school year, but not quite so much. Then in the fall, I take the pieces I wrote over the summer, I still sit at my desk with pencil and paper and compose that way. In the fall, I take whatever little bits of free time I have and turn out the computer version of the scores and parts of the pieces. But basically in the spring, I'm doing Grawlmeyer Ward.
Okay.
That takes up all of my time. I have very little time for composing or other activities.
Do you? Some composers compose a lot for commissions, requests, and that sort of thing. Others maybe do a lot more personal composing, doing things they just want to do. Do you find it's heavy on one side or the other, or a balance of the two?
It's a balance of the two. You know, one year it might be I'll have just gotten a lot of requests or commissions, and another year I won't have. I think probably over the course of my life, it's probably maybe half and half pieces that I just write because I just want to write them.
Sure.
And then pieces that somebody has commissioned or requested. Mm-hmm. Of the two pieces today, the first one we heard was a commission from the Verdier Trio. This piece I wrote just because I wanted to write it. And I actually, it's my first big piece for string quartet. I just hadn't written one, and I thought I needed to. And it's the Memento Mori series seemed like a good possibility to write a piece for string quartet. So,
well, let's hear a little bit about Memento. You already talked about the exhibit. Tell us maybe specifically about this particular.
Okay, this one bears the subtitle "Hope Chest Full of Sand." One of those interactive features that we talked about, or that I talked about earlier in this Karen Finley exhibit, was that they had this beautifully carved wooden box, I mean, the size of a good sized chest, and it was filled with sand. And they had a feather pin to the side there. And guests to the exhibit were invited to write a message in the sand, presumably to someone that they had lost. And then, of course, your message would be obliterated by the message of the next person, whose message would be obliterated by the next person. So it was a sort of a commentary on, you know, on the shortness of life and the ephemeral nature of art. You know, some art more than others. So I took that as the subtitle for this particular piece. This piece covers a lot of the same emotional ground as the first piece we heard, obviously, but it's a little longer, and unlike the first piece, it's in a slow tempo all the way through. Although there are places it will seem very agitated, it's quite a long stretch of slow music. I think it's the longest single stretch of slow music I've ever written. It's about 15 or 16 minutes long, so it's a fairly substantial piece. You'll hear in it not everything a string quartet can do, but lots of different sorts of things that individual stringed instruments can do, and then also as a group. And again, it's my colleagues from the University of Louisville, the Louisville String Quartet, will be the performers. And anything else?
I think we should just hear the work. Memento Mori 2, Hope Chest Full of Sand, by Mark Satterwhite, performed by the Louisville String Quartet on Classical 90.5 and during Lunchtime Classics.
Thank you. Thank you.
Classical 90.5 and live during Lunchtime Classics here at 619 South 4th Street. The music of Mark Satterwhite as performed by the Louisville String Quartet. Thank you for being here, Mark, and fantastic work and what incredible playing from the Louisville String Quartet. Remind us again of the title of this work.
This one is Memento Mori 2 with the subtitle Hope Chest Full of Sand. I think this probably occupied most of my colleagues' Christmas break.
And I'm, Merry Christmas to them.
Very grateful to them for doing that. I should mention that there are two other pieces on tomorrow night's program besides these two, and neither one of them is about death. So it's it will be a varied program. There will also be a sonata for violin and piano and a piece for violin, cello, and piano, and then the two pieces that you heard today. So I would certainly like to plug myself and invite everyone to come to the concert tomorrow night. That's Thursday at 8 o'clock in Comstock Hall at U of L.
And it's free and open to the public.
Free and open to the public. And four pieces, beautifully performed. And
I'm sure you can visit louisville.edu/music, I think is the website for the School of Music, to find out more about the concert, directions, and times and all that. Let me just ask you one thing about writing for the string quartet, because it is one of the oldest chamber groups in existence still today, that is still composed for regularly.
Sure.
And you said it was your first substantial work for string quartet. Did you have any sort of fears getting close to it? And anyone in particular, any composers, string quartets, who you look to maybe for inspiration, guidance?
Well, I was actually terrified of writing a string quartet for a long time because it has this just wonderful repertory dating back to Haydn and Mozart. And you think of there are dozens of quartets by Haydn and Mozart. There are the 16 Beethoven quartets. There are, every composer poured his heart out into the string quartet. In the 20th century alone, you have the great six quartets of Bartok, the 15 of Shostakovich, and composers like Ludwigslawski and Ligeti, Crumb have all just written magnificent pieces for the string quartet. It was actually terribly intimidating. Every time I would try to sit down and write a string quartet, I would find myself, for a long time, basically channeling Bartok, because I love those quartets of Bartok so much, and it was just impossible to get them out of my ears. And then I found myself channeling George Crumb's great piece Black Angels for string quartet. I couldn't get that out of my head. And I finally just said, I have to get over this. I have to write a significant work for string quartet. In listening to this, I think to a little extent I'm channeling a bit of Ligeti in this particular piece, more so than I realized when I was writing it. I hope not in a bad way, but it does strike me now in a way that that I wasn't aware of when I was writing it, that probably was my main influence in this particular piece, besides obviously wanting to explore the emotional world suggested by the title and by the wonderful art exhibit that inspired it.
Well, we thank our live performers, and we're going to move to something unusual for Lunchtime Classics. We're going to move to a recorded work by Mark Satterwhite, and I believe this work is for tuba and
percussion.
And tell us a little bit about this one.
Some years ago I got the opportunity to write a piece for Gene Picorni, who's the tuba player of the Chicago Symphony, and in the low brass world, sort of a demigod.
Okay.
I knew, because I was writing it for him, that I could write pretty much anything I felt like writing and it would get played. I was still a tad intimidated. I personally don't care very much for the combination of brass instruments and piano. Just something about it doesn't quite work for me. So I didn't want to do a tuba and piano piece. I didn't want to do an unaccompanied tuba piece because it's very difficult writing pieces for unaccompanied brass instruments. They're the breathing issues, and it's just tricky. And I finally got this idea of writing it for tuba and a single percussionist. The title is And What Rough Beast. People who know poetry will recognize that as a quote from The Second Coming, the great poem by Yeats. In my not terribly informed opinion, but probably the greatest short poem of the English language of the 20th century. And it's a poem, despite the title The Second Coming, it's actually a poem about the coming of the Antichrist. And the final couplet that ends the poem is, "And what rough beast, it's hour come round at last, slouches towards Bethlehem to be born. I think, you know, just one of the most chilling couple of lines in English literature. And so my piece is a reflection of that. It starts out with very kind of sly and insinuating music, alternating with more boisterous kind of music. And at the end, the sly and insinuating music gets transformed and becomes very, very imposing. As I said, since I was writing for basically the best tuba player in the world, I just wrote what I wanted to write and didn't worry about it. And the percussion writing is also similarly virtuosic. And somewhat to my surprise, this piece has actually kind of taken off in a minor way in the tuba world. Low brass players have a kind of macho thing going, and they hear this very loud, boisterous, challenging piece on Gene's recording, and they want to do it. So, you know, several times a year I get a request from somebody who's heard this CD to get the sheet music from me, and a lot of them ended up performing it. I've been very pleased about that, considering it's a very, very difficult piece and considering that it's a very weird combination of instruments. So it's about 11 or 12 minutes long. Again, the title is And What Rough Beast.
And the performers are?
The performers are Gene Picorni, tuba, and the percussionist is Ted Otcotts, who was, I think he's quit, but he was for several years a percussionist in the Chicago Symphony, in fact, principal percussionist for a few years. So, you know, just two of the best players on their instruments that exist. So it's a stunning performance, and it's on a recording by Gene Picorni of tuba music called Big Boy.
Okay.
So appropriate, and so I hope you will enjoy that as well.
Let's hear that. The music of Mark Satterwhite on 90.5. On Lunchtime Classics, not live, but a recording of the music of Mark Satterwhite, work for tuba and percussion. Tell us the title and the performers again.
The title is And What Rough Beast, the title taken from the great poem by Yeats. The performers are tubist Gene Picorni and percussionist Ted Otcott.
The music of Mark Satterwhite here on Lunchtime Classics, live in the performance studios of Classical 90.5. I'd like to thank our live audience for being here. We thank you, as always, for listening online and at 90.5 FM. Visit our website, wuol.org, for information about upcoming Lunchtime Classics. I'm Daniel Gillum. Thank you for being here.